All right, guys, welcome to the Reap Culture Podcast. I am your gracious host, Coach Sam, and I'm here with another wonderful guest here on the Reap Culture Podcast. And this lady here, ladies and gentlemen, is really making some big moves. When I first found out what she was doing, I was like, damn, that is exactly like her. She's always been aggressive and always been a pillar in the community. She represents for where she comes from, and she's proud of where she comes from, and she really cares about our people, y'all. And I thought that it would be great to bring her on the show and talk about her journey as being first and foremost a mother, a wife, again, a great pillar in the community, and a business owner, somebody who's built a business from the ground up and actually really been making moves in that space. And she's been making personal products for women. I'm not sure if you've been doing it longer, you know, and doing things for men and other groups of people, but we'll get into that as well. She's been featured on Shark Tank, and she's done a host of other things. She also has a organization that we'll talk about as well. So what I want you guys to do, first and foremost, guys, I want you guys to like, share, and subscribe to the Reap Culture Podcast. We are available on all podcasting platforms, and also follow me on all your social media platforms. Coach Sam, Sam is CEO. That's S-A-M-I-S CEO. Go ahead and follow us there. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you guys my friend, my former classmate, Chelsea Lewis, former Rattler. So let's go Rattlers. What's up, Chelsea? How you doing?
Hey, Sam. How you doing?
You know, I can't complain. Like I said, I'm trying to get some work done here. So, you know, I got the space to myself. I got my ambiance going, and I'm just excited to get this interview done and see what you've been up to and just chop it up with you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Chelsea, let's get into it. So you are, of course, a Rattler, Florida A&M University graduate, fellow SBIN, School of Business, for those of you who don't know how we get down on the highest of seven hills. You're in Jacksonville now, right?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, tell the listeners a little bit more about you. She's from the 305, y'all, Dade County. She represents her. But she's in Jacksonville. But tell the listeners a little bit about you, where you come from, a little bit of your background, and then we'll lead into how you got started in business.
Sure. So I'm Chelsea Lewis. I'm the owner of My Mommy Wisdom. It is a cruelty-free organic product line for women and children. I make products to support women throughout the prenatal, postnatal, and motherhood journey, just because as a Black woman, I know how important it is for our maternal health. So we could get into that a little bit more, but that's who I am. I'm also a wife and mom, like Sam mentioned. Once a Rattler, always a Rattler.
That's right.
I am from Miami, and me and my husband moved to Jacksonville a couple of years ago when we had our second child. So he's originally from Jacksonville. So being here, it's almost like a little Atlanta. It's bigger than Atlanta, but the feel is similar. There's so many successful Black owners, Black professionals here. So I always try to advocate, you know, like, hey, if y'all want to stay in Florida, come to Jacksonville. It's a good city. How I got started in business was, I think as a child, seeing my father. So my father is a retired OBGYN. And he had his own practice. So I was always at the practice. I always saw, you know, my mom manage the day-to-day operations and my dad perform the services. So knowing what it was like to be hardworking, dedicated, all of that stuff was a no-brainer, but I didn't put those skills into effect until I remember I was at a sleepaway camp in middle school. And I was heavy set. It was a weight loss camp. And before we left, my mom had packed me down with like the Costco size Crystal Light soda waters and dip with the different flavors and some gum that was sugar free. And I remember flipping that and selling it for like $2, a dollar for a pack of gum. And so my mom, I remember one of the camp counselors called my mom and was like, please tell your daughter to stop selling. Other parents are complaining that their kids don't have enough money to get their necessities. So I think that's when like the business bug hit me. And then as Sam mentioned, I went to FAMU and I was a part of the business school there. And he and I hung real tight from freshman year. I remember we saw each other in our freshman experience class. And just since then, I think FAMU only further impacted our skills into business. So there's just a lot of things that now I'm trying to do or make inroads to impact my community in a positive way, put Black women in a better light, put our maternal health in a better light, our children in a better light. So a lot of my background is around kids. And so I've just been trying to figure out everything that I do to encompass how to put us in a better space. So this is like the perfect podcast to talk about that.
Excellent. Excellent. Again, we definitely appreciate you coming on. You said one key thing that just stood out to me, and I think every entrepreneur goes through this, and it gets to a point where, you know, the status quo doesn't allow you to think outside of the box. A lot of the times it doesn't allow you to operate outside of the norm. And when you said you went to that camp and you found a market for yourself, and they wouldn't allow you to, they kind of gave you some flack around, you know, you operating your business. I think every entrepreneur goes through that. It's like the kid who sells candy in the school. You kind of have to keep it under wraps because, you know, the powers that be, they're going to shut you down. And I think that we all learn from that experience, and it makes us much stronger. And it's like that first teaching point in entrepreneurship and in business. So, and then along with the fact that you dealing with your parents and seeing just how that operates and how that flows, I think that's very important to the development of people who go out and start new things and new ventures. So talk about how My Mommy's Wisdom got started. What was the aha moment for you when you said, hey, there's a market here? Did you start by just developing products to use on yourself? And first and foremost, let's back up just a little bit. Are you developing lotions, tablets? What are you developing? And then go ahead and go into that next piece.
Sure. So I have 15 products. So they're supplements or capsules. I have it for breast milk production. I have a hair growth serum. I have a T-bend serum. I have a cream for stretch marks, and I have another for eczema. So to answer the question, when I first had my first child, I dealt with postpartum depression. I could not get my milk up. My son had the worst time teething. He had eczema. He had cradle cap. Like all the worst things you could have happened. So by the time I had my second child, she had issues that my son didn't have. And these are common things. But as a first-time parent, you kind of freak out because you're like, how can I help my baby? They're so young, they can't take a lot of things over the counter until they're 2 years old. So they have to kind of suffer through. And that meant a crying baby, a sleepless night for me and daddy, you know, us being irritable and frustrated. So when I had my daughter, she actually fell really ill, and she ended up passing out. I want to say she was 10 months old. And I remember talking to her, and she had like stood up, like to pull herself up. And I remember her just like her eyes rolling back and falling. And I was like, oh my God, like, you know, what happened? I rushed her to the ER, and she had a respiratory infection, fever of 104. And so I'm just devastated. I'm crying. I'm calling my parents, asking them what could be wrong. Nobody knew what was wrong until they found out the diagnosis. And I just have been to the ER so much with her that I told my mom, it has to be a better way. Something has to start working because my baby has such a weak immune system. And my mom, she was like, you figure it out. Try to make something, Chelsea. So having that background of my dad being a doctor and my mom, she's a retired pediatric nurse, I already knew some of the common things to help make you healthy, but I never put them into play. So I started to mix and dabble, making products for my kids, and I wrote a blog about it. And then I had friends that were like, hey, my child's going through the same thing. Can I try it? Or my child's going through this. Do you have something for that? And instead of saying no, I would research and figure out a way to find something to combat that. So by the time I had started my website, I had already had 4 products that I had already tried and people, you know, were receptive to and got good feedback. So the product line ended up evolving off of that. Every time me or someone I knew experienced a commonality in pregnancy or motherhood, I wanted to create a product that kind of made that journey easier and more tolerable. And so that's why I have a variety of different items, but the categories are for mom, for baby, for feminine hygiene, and then for hair growth. So it's definitely, and we're ever evolving and, you know, coming up with more ideas to make. So, yeah.
Okay. What has been one of the most effective, I don't want to call it chemicals, but things that you use, just a base of something, just something simple that you can do to like calm your baby down? Or I know for us, people were recommending like lavender. Do you have like any basic, you don't have to give away your whole formula, but just something basic that you can use for a really basic ailment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't use any chemicals in my products, but I use a lot of essential oils for that very reason, because they're gentle enough for baby. And even if you don't apply it directly to their body, you could have a diffuser or you could put, you know, it in their bathtub. But I think lavender is really good for relaxing. And then peppermint essential oil is good for focus and mental clarity. So I have read up that like if you have a toddler that's really irritable or hyperactive, if you put peppermint in a diffuser, it helps them to kind of calm down a little bit, to just focus on one thing instead of, you know, getting into a lot. So essential oils are tried and true. I live by them all. I recommend them to people all the time.
Beautiful. Now, what was the first product that you actually developed and say, hey, I have something here, I want to sell it, let's see how it goes?
It was my pH balancer. It's a feminine hygiene product, and it helped with just restoring a woman's natural pH balance. So after children, sometimes they could, their body could be out of whack or, you know, different things. I don't want to get too technical, but different things can throw a woman's pH off. And I created it a little bit by accident. I was like, let me just try this and see. And it ended up being kind of like the base for a lot of my products. You know how you have like the Holy Trinity when you cook your onions, your bell peppers, and your celery? That's been my Holy Trinity. And I actually white label that particular product to a really well-known company. So that was like my first time, like, wow, if not only I made this and people purchased it from me, but they're purchasing it by the droves from this other person, this must really work. So it just inspired me to keep on going and trying and trying.
Now, as far as white labeling is concerned, can you break down? I'm familiar with white labeling, private labeling. Can you break that down and explain to the listeners what that is?
Sure. So it's basically when you manufacture a product or you make a product and another business says, hey, we love this, we would like to sell it to our customers, but we want to use our logo and our name on it. So you upcharge whatever your wholesale price would be, and you would allow them to use your product with their labeling on it. It's still your recipe, you made it, but their audience base or customers think that it's theirs and they made it. So it's kind of like if you go into a Walmart, you'll see the brand name, maybe Zyrtec, but Walmart has the same type of product, but they call it like Walzerg. So that's technically white labeling.
Okay, excellent. That's like another, it's not quite licensing, but it's another form of licensing pretty much, right. Which is a very, very powerful tool that you can use to get your brand out there, especially on the business to business side. Mm-hmm. So now let's pause on a minute with your business. Let's talk about just gaining that traction. You were on Shark Tank, or you had an opportunity to participate with Shark Tank. Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, so I got an email. I'm a part of like a Black business professional group in Jacksonville. And I received the email about Shark Tank has a minority business rep that goes into cities with a lot of African-Americans, so like Jacksonville, Chicago, Atlanta, because they want to provide more representation for viewers. And I had a email to basically say, hey, I know that you have a small business. Would you be interested in applying to Shark Tank? Heck yeah, I would. So I did all the preliminary steps, and then I made it only into the second round. After you do all the paperwork, then you have to pitch to the producers, which they want to, if anyone ever gets the opportunity, they want someone who is good for TV. So no matter how great your business is, how successful it is, they pick people that are going to be good for ratings. So when I didn't make it, I was like, man, you know, how come they didn't pick me, you know, to go and pitch to the Sharks? I have something that's good, but I had to realize that, you know, I may not have what they were looking for, but that doesn't mean that my business or product, it cannot be successful. So I would say if people are interested, they are always searching every season. I still get emails for representatives to be a part of that. I would definitely just Google like Shark Tank minorities and see if something comes up where if a business owner is interested, they could be included on the list.
And that was something really important that you said, something that we all deal with, again, being entrepreneurs, and that is rejection. And in the curriculum that I have a whole section on dealing with rejection. You go through the part where you want to get your family and friends buying stuff, and you know, you put it on social media, and it's like you might get one or two people, and you're like, dang. But you know, you have to realize that your products, number one, they're not for everybody. Number two, some people may just, they can't afford your products. You know, you might have a couple of haters out there, but you know, it's all about just understanding the marketplace and who you're actually serving. So speak on your experience with rejection and those first moments when you kind of went against that brick wall and you're like, dang, man, can I really do this? What were some of the things you did to overcome it? Did you utilize your family? Was your husband a big support? Mom, dad, speak on that.
My biggest support initially when I started was actually fellow Rattlers. So I am a part of a mom group, and my friend, she started it, Devin, she created it for wives. It was because a lot of us were getting engaged after college. And then a lot of the wives end up becoming moms and pregnant. And so I had shared it with them first before family and friends, before family, because I was like, hey, you know, you want to try the sample, try it out. And that was really supportive. But once I had made it an official business and I shared it on social media, I didn't get the same reception from family. And that was like, you know, I felt rejected because I'm like, man, you know, I see my cousin asking, you know, tips for eczema, and I got a whole product line over here. Like, hey, I'm over here. And it does hurt your feelings. It does make you, you know, kind of step back and like, what? But I had to come to a point where support is shown in different ways. So yeah, they may not have purchased, but maybe they shared it on social media, or maybe they just share it with their friends, or, you know, maybe, you know, you were going through a tough time and they kept you encouraged. That could be supportive, or they may support you outside of your business. So I think the minute as a business owner, that's, it shows if you have tough skin or not to continue, because you have ebbs and flows, you have highs and lows. So once you're able to get over that rejection, like you said, and you still keep going, then you know you have the momentum to continue, because you're even going to have customers that may not like it or may not work for them. And that's okay, because nothing is 100% foolproof or perfect. Amazon, Jeff Bezos is worth $214 billion. And I can guarantee you there's over 1,000 people who probably hate Amazon and never purchased from Amazon, you know, but that doesn't mean he can't be successful. So as long as you can get over that rejection, that's half the battle.
Yeah, he definitely ain't tripping if you don't like that Bible. So let's talk about the startup process. Now, a lot of people get afraid when they hear the word startup and they hear the word capital. You got a lot of stuff online that says you can start businesses with zero money down, all this type of stuff. So now let's be realistic. If you can remember just starting up your first product, what were some of the investments? Did you have angel investors? Did you start up with just savings? Or, you know, just talk about that whole process of the finances behind starting that first product.
So I'll go back. This business that I have is my third business. My two first companies failed. So my first business was, I wanted to create like a party in the box. So when people had events or parties, you could just have everything delivered to you. Now, this was before Amazon, so I don't want people to say, what? This was way back, like 2010, I had developed this idea. And I think I spent like 4 or 5 years on it. I had spent at least $10,000 worth of capital that I had developed from saving, or I worked the whole time. So I just had it. My husband, you know, he supported me. And when that failed, I felt horrible, because I was like, dang, I've taken money out of our household to invest in this idea and it did not pull through. And I felt a lot of guilt. My husband never resented me. He never was mad. See, that's why I don't, he never said that, but I felt guilty, because like I said, that's a tremendous amount of money for, you know, a young couple starting off. And we didn't have our child at that time. So you could just imagine, you know, y'all are young. That's a lot. So that was difficult for me. Then I came up with another business, resume reviews, where I would revise resumes online. But that one was more successful. But the amount of time that I would spend, the labor involved versus what I was getting paid, wasn't adding up. So I would spend hours working on something, but I wasn't getting my worth. So struggling and figuring out how you get paid to be profitable, you know, that's something that I think a lot of startup people don't realize with pricing. You know, you have to put a price tag on your labor, on your time, on your research, etc. And I, again, resented those moments, but through those failures, it allowed me to know what it takes to have a successful company. So by the time my mommy wisdom came around, I knew what not to do. I know that I purchased things, and I will only purchase what I knew I could sell. I never over-purchased. So let's say if you have a t-shirt company, I'm not going to come out the gate with 1,000 shirts. I'm only going to purchase the minimum. And then however long it took me to sell these shirts, then I know what I need to do for the next round, the next round. So I think kind of a little like trial and error helped. I never had capital or angel investors, put it like that. I never had angel investors. But what I did was I always, when I got paid, I would put $50, $100, whatever I could afford to the side and pour it back into my company. When you have kids, get married, you get a mortgage, that's different. You know, you might only put $2, but I always did that because I want to get in a habit of paying myself back and knowing how valuable my time is. So that's something that I practice now, but I definitely know that the startup process is difficult. I used to be a small business development specialist years ago, and a lot of the startups would come in and say, I don't know how to start. So I want to let people know in every major city or a city that has a university, there is something called the Small Business Development Center, and it's a free resource where there's consultants that help you throughout the process and strengthen your approach. They would help you with your business plan, help you find a capital and things like that, so that you could be in a better position to succeed. Because most businesses fail in the first 3 years of their inception. So,
yep. Yeah, I find that to be the same thing after trying to start numerous businesses. You're going to fail. I mean, yeah. It's very rare that somebody hits a home run out the park. Mm-hmm. And develop a very successful business straight out the gate. So you gotta think about that and take that into consideration. When you first started, talk about the marketing. Like, I know that's one of the biggest expenses that I've ever had to incur. So some people think you have to get out here and buy commercials on ABC, which is like millions and millions of dollars. My fiance, Cassandra, she's really good with word of mouth. Like, she doesn't put out flyers, business cards, nothing. She just gets business to her phone, just word of mouth. So are you word of mouth, or are you doing Facebook and Instagram ads? Are you going to events? How are you getting the word out about your company?
I did all of it, and I think people have to do a little bit of everything, because depending on what industry you're in, it's going to be receptive or not. So I did the trade shows. It was not receptive for me personally. I did a radio ad. It was not, people would say, hey, I heard you on the radio, but it didn't impact them to purchase. So for me, word of mouth worked. However, that may not be feasible for everyone, especially if you have something that's a little bit more complex. Like with services, it's easy to provide word of mouth, but with the product, it may be something that's only for a specific audience. So word of mouth has been my strongest standpoint. And I listened to Melissa Butler. She's a fellow Rattler. She owns the Lip Bar, and she's in Target and Walmart, and she did this like mentoring seminar with Motorola. And I remember her saying, it is more expensive to spend resources creating a new customer than it is to maintain a loyal customer. Once a person has purchased with you one time, you need to do what you have to do to keep them purchasing, because as long as they're happy, they're going to share it. They're going to tell friends. So I think sometimes as business owners, we just want a lot of new customers, but if they're not coming back, then that's an issue. So I would say cultivate the people who are spending with you and figure out how to make them happy, if that means rewards, discounts, personal letters or messages, you know, whatever that customer experience is, maintain that, and they will be your marketers. And that's free marketing, because they'll tell everybody, they'll share it on their social media, and then you'll have more eyes on you. So I have done Facebook ads, Instagram. Those are always hit or miss. You end up spending more money than making sometimes. But I think as long as you satisfy the loyal customer, that's where you'll get the most ROI or return on investment.
Referrals, referrals, referrals. I'm so big on referrals. Mm-hmm. And working out situations where you can get like partnerships or joint ventures, or doing something like you're doing with the white labeling is key, because acquiring a customer, a brand new customer, will cost you a ton of money. So, you know, partnering with different businesses who are already speaking to the customers in the target market that you're approaching is like gold. And making it work for both sides is great. So that was good. Really, really good information here, guys. Again, like, share, subscribe the podcast, the Reap Culture Podcast. We're going to put all the links below this podcast and this YouTube video for those of you who are privy to the video, and you'll be able to purchase all of Chelsea's products right here on the Reap Culture Podcast. So now, Chelsea, how did you come up with that name?
My mommy wisdom.
Yeah.
The mommy came from being a mom, and wisdom came from my parents. I had a lot of knowledge at a younger age. I would have friends that when I was in high school, they'd be like, "Hey, ask your dad, what does this mean?" Or I'm going through this, but I can't tell my mom, so ask your dad. So kind of having that so much and going to my parents, I just started to be able to regurgitate a lot of information about the female anatomy or the baby at such a young age before I started experiencing certain things for myself. So I always felt like I was wise to things. And I just thought that that would be a good name to put together. You know, your mom always, you go to them for wisdom. So this is a product line for moms, and that offers wisdom.
Okay, so now you're established. You have a base of customers. Are you selling online? Are you brick and mortar? How are you actually getting and delivering your products to your clients?
Yes, so I'm selling on my website, mymommywisdom.com. I also sell on Amazon. If you go on Amazon and you search, you could put My Mommy Wisdom products, and you should see the listings there. I also, there is a Black-owned baby marketplace that's e-commerce. It's called blackownedbaby.com, and it's everything Black-owned for babies, so Black clothes, etc. I sell on there, and then I did have a brick-and-mortar location in Jacksonville, but as of last month, I'm no longer there. I think it's hard in brick-and-mortars because with COVID, everybody was at home. And so everyone was doing online shopping. And I feel like our generation is making things, we're putting it more towards technology and online shopping. So people aren't going in one specific store. They want to go in, they're not going in one specific store for one product. What's easier or what's more convenient is going into one store to buy several different things. So now my focus has moved from just a brick and mortar location to getting into retailers. So I've been working on different grocery stores or different stores that connect with the customer base that I'm using to try to get more traction out there. Because like I said, people are just more, it's more convenient to purchase online. So that's something that we're trying to expand to now.
Okay, now talk about the experience with the retailers. I know they have different criterias. Do they have like a minimum valuable product that they're looking for? Or, you know, is there a process that you have to go through to say to get into a Walmart or a Target? Do they put you with a rep? How does that process look like?
So I can speak from the service that I'm using. I actually hired a team to do my retail because I just didn't really know how to approach buyers. But I have a cousin that owns the first black winery or wine company in Florida. And she utilized some resources. She had peers in businesses that, you know, worked in executive positions at retailers. So they were able to put her in front of them. And she is doing more like she's pitching to the buyer. So every retailer has a buyer for different categories. So you have a wine, let's say Walmart, you have a wine or liquor buyer, you have one for baby products, you have one for groceries, etc. So the buyer is going to ask you a criteria of questions to see if you're qualified for one, that industry, but also if you can sell. Because anybody can have products in a store, but if they're not selling, they're not going to want to waste their time. So it can be a little intrusive They're going to want to know your current numbers, your projections. It has to make sense. They want to know what other companies are or retailers that have your products, because the way they're thinking is, we don't want to put our name on the line if you haven't put your skin in the game. So let's say if you approach a Walmart, but you have no other retailers to back you, Walmart may not say yes. So what I've been doing is my team has been approaching smaller stores and getting feedback from them, and I can tweak it, I can improve it, what I need to work on, so that when I get to a point where I can go to a Walmart, I'll be set. Also, drop shipping is really important. They want to know that it's not you that's shipping the items from your house, that you have a warehouse, that you have a team dedicated, because Walmart may call and say, I need 15,000 units by next month in Atlanta, and if you're doing that by yourself, they know that you can't accommodate that need. So drop shipping is something that Amazon offers. Like, you know, they have fulfillment centers where you can send your products there and then they'll send it out. But that's something that a lot of bigger retailers want to know, is that, do you have the capacity to meet the demands that they want? So I would say the best advice, unless you're in a position where, like my cousin, you have the resources and network to approach buyers yourself, I would say hire a team, because they're going to make sure that you're ready first before you even go to them, and you'll have all your ducks in a row.
And yeah, I was going to ask you that, follow up with this. Do you utilize Amazon FBA?
No, my products are temperature sensitive. So it will have to be in a cooling kind of atmosphere. And I just think that from what I personally read with Amazon, it's more of a warehouse setting that's outside, and all of my, because they're natural, they're organic, they don't have any preservatives in it, they wouldn't do well with that. So I do have a manufacturer that I'm talking to, and I'm looking for like a warehouse that either I have to, you know, kind of service, or they can do the drop shipping.
So how do you source your products? Are you sourcing them from overseas? I'm sure you have to buy in pretty large quantities. Do you have a partner or a supplier that helps you with that?
Yes. So when you're starting off, again, I had to learn you only need to buy what you can sell. So if you're baby brand new to business, I would say look at Amazon, because you could buy products in bulk there. Once my demand started to reach a certain level, I did start to have to utilize overseas suppliers overseas. So like for containers, I have found that in America, but like for certain specific containers, it may be more expensive in America, just because they have to purchase it from overseas and then come and sell it to you. So what I did was just cut out the middleman, and I went on Alibaba, and I just said, I'm gonna just put it out there. And what I did was I made sure I knew what I needed the supplier to provide. We did mock-ups, we did samples, and only until I approved the sample that I had in my hand did I continue to work with them. So now I've been working with one supplier for a year, and they always know, like, Chelsea, it's been 2 months. I know you need another order. And I'm like, you're right. Let me just go ahead and put that in. So I have done it that way. I've utilized certain products in different, like Canada are cheaper, you know, so you just kind of have to, depending on where you're at, utilize what's going to be most cost efficient for you.
Man, that's a whole lot of good information, guys. I'm trying to tell you. This will be like the last question, Chelsea, and then we can get you going here. How do you track your sales? How do you know that you're growing and that you're expanding and that you need to purchase this and that because your demand is growing? What do you use to look at that and make those decisions?
So I got lucky because I married an accountant. So he set me up with a template basically to I could see month by month what my sales are. It's essentially a profit and loss statement. So you put your sales and you deduct your expenses. And then that's how you know what your net profit is, because everybody always talks about sales. So you can make $1 million in sales, but your net profit may only be 10,000 after you paid for all your expenses. So that's your product, ingredients, your supplies, your marketing, et cetera. What I have learned is you need to be intentional about what your goals are. So every year, what I manifest is that the next year I will double in sales. The next year I will double. So that holds you a little bit accountable, because let's say you're looking at your numbers in January and February, March you take a dip, April you're back up, May, June you're down. It helps you see that every business has trends. There's going to be a time where people are not going to be buying as much because certain things are seasonal. So for me, the summer months, because I have products for moms and babies or children, the summer months, I have my lowest sales. Why? Because moms are out of routine, they're traveling, kids are not in school, so they don't need those same things, versus in the fall and in the spring when they're fixated in, you know, their homes, that's where they need it. Plus, that's also the time where a lot of babies are born or conceived. So you have to know your industry, your peaks and lows, and that helps you with your demand and keeping track of that. So you can, you know, maybe I could provide Sam with the empty template that I've used. And if Sam, you want to provide that as a link, that way some business owners can kind of see how it is, because when you're spending money and you don't document it, you don't know how much is going out and how much you're keeping. And that helps keep me accountable and lets me know, hey, I got a little bit of money. Let me put more into this expense, or I'm spending too much on this. Let me take that out and save some money.
Excellent. We really appreciate that. We really appreciate that you're providing that template, guys. So take advantage. I know I said one more question, but I got one more question.
Go ahead.
For those people who are 9-to-5ers, who are working a job and they want to get out, when did you decide that, hey, I'm just going to go full time? What was that moment? Was it a moment of you looking at the numbers, or you had a really good day or a good month and you said, oh, hell with this job, I'm going full-fledged in? What was that aha moment for you?
It had to be the numbers. So I'm going to keep it real with y'all. Last year I had 3 jobs, including my business. And that was because I knew where I wanted to be for personal and professional growth. But when my business started to outweigh what I was getting with my other two, that's what made me say, okay, can I afford to just own my own business and work for myself? I think sometimes we're the generation, millennials, where we jump ship and we go out on faith and, you know, we ask God to figure it out for us. But a lot of people struggle with going full-time entrepreneurship if they have families, if, you know, bills and stuff like that don't stop. So I would say the best thing to do is look at all your expenses for the month and see if you're going to be able to accommodate that based on what you're earning in net profit in your business for a month. And if it looks good, your net profit looks good, then you'll be good. Like I said, you can have $100,000 in sales, but only net profit $10,000, and you wouldn't want to eat off of $10,000 for a whole year. So I think for like the more cautious people, that's the route I would take. And for those risk takers that are like, look, I know if I work for myself, I'm a grind, I'm gonna go hard. That works too. Because at the end of the day, when you're only dependent on you, you know you're not gonna fail yourself. So everybody's personality is different. I kind of am more of the cautious one. But that was my deciding factor, was like, hey, I'm working in all these jobs, but the job that, or the business that I have, is profiting me more. Let me spend more time on this.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And there you guys have it. Again, Chelsea Lewis, My Mommy's Wisdom. Go ahead and check her out. The links will be available. Chelsea, where can we find you? Where can we buy your products? Let us know.
You can find me on Instagram or Facebook. On Instagram, it's mommy.wisdom. And you can search my website, which is mymommywisdom.com. And if you have any questions, I am always willing to answer them. As long as if I don't know the answer, I'll try to find somebody who does. So people can always reach out to me, or they can email me at hello@mymommywisdom.com.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another great interview right here on the Reap Culture Podcast. Remember to like, share, and subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Remember, guys, share, share, share. We need to get this information out here because it's vital, and we need to keep on growing as a community of people. With that being said, guys, I'll catch you guys on the next show. It's Coach Sam signing off. Reap culture. You reap what you sow.